Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Chavet Amud Aleph, five lines down in the Gemara. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the machloket that we saw yesterday with regards to Isur Hana'ah. The Mishnah takes it for granted that there's an Isur Hana'ah associated with Chametz. The question is, where in the Torah do we ever find such a concept of Isur Hana'ah b'chametz? And that's true with most Isurei Hana'ah. The Torah is not explicit in the form or the reasons that we have Isurei Hana'ah. So we had a machloket yesterday between Chizkiah and Rabbi Elbow as to what generates the Isur Hana'ah, the Gabei Chametz. Chizkiah says the fact that the Torah phrased it as lo ye'achel, the passive form of the verb that it refers to, as we said yesterday, to the object itself and not to the individual or the action of the individual towards that object. So therefore, that's a reference to Isur Hana'ah versus Isur Achilah. On the other hand, Rabbi Abba believes that in every Isur Achilah is embedded in Isur Hana'ah. The reason that he says that is because the Psukim, Eitzel Nevelah, specifically say that you're allowed to get benefit from the Nevelah. Well, why did the Torah have to tell you can get benefit from the Nevelah when the Torah never restricted you against getting Isur Hana'ah from the Nevelah? It must be that that is a derivative of Achilah. The fact that the Torah says don't eat it means also don't get benefit from it. So therefore, unless the Torah specifies otherwise, do not eat also means do not get hana'ah from it. So those are the two positions that we saw. Yesterday, Chizkiah says that it comes out of lo ye'achel, and Rabbo says that any time there's an Isur Achilah, there's automatically an Isur hana'ah. So that's what we begin with here, five lines down, Achav Ben Amun Aleph, Meitiv Rabbi Yitzhak Nafko, Havarei Gida Nasheh. By Gida Nasheh, which one is restricted from eating, the Rachman Amar, Al Kein Lo Yochlu Bnei Yisrael Gida Nasheh. You're not allowed to eat the Gida Nasheh. So according to Rabbi Obao, Al Kein Lo Yochlu Bnei Yisrael Gida Nasheh should incorporate within it Isur Hana'ah. Tznan, on the other hand, we have a Mishnah that says, Sholeach Adam Yerach Lenachri, V'Gida Nasheh B'tocho. A person can send to a Nachri, to a non-Jew, he can send their hind leg, even though the Gida Nasheh is embedded in the hind leg. Because it's obvious that the Gida Nasheh is still there. What we're worried about here is that another Jew will see this Jew selling the meat to the Nachri, and then he'll think that that meat is kasher, or he'll buy it from the Nachri knowing that it was sold to him by a Jew, and he might come to eat the Gida Nasheh, because it's also assumed that the Gida Nasheh was taken out. So the Gemara says we don't have to worry about that, because the location, the Gida Nasheh, is so obvious. The fact that it hasn't been removed is so obvious that even if you sell it to an Achri, a Jew buys it from him, will see that the Gida Nasheh is still embedded inside of it. Now, the basic problem here is that you have a Mishnah that says that you're allowed to give this or sell this to the Nachri. So if you can give it to Nachri, that shows that you can get benefit from the Gida Nasheh, despite the fact that there's a restriction against eating the Gida Nasheh. According to Rabbi Bo, the restriction of eating the Gida Nasheh should also incorporate an Isur Hana'ah. So why all of a sudden over here do I have permission to sell it to the Nachri, or give it to the Nachri? Gemara says, Kasav Rabbi Abba, Kishuhutra Nevela, when we have the dispensation of the Torah to get benefit from Nevela, the source for the Isur Hana'ah everywhere else in the Torah, Nevela is not a small category, a narrow category of simply Nevela, but includes all things that come from that type of Isur Achila, which is Nevela, Hi, Vichelba, Vigida, Hutra. So all of those items, Gira Nasheh, the chelev, Isur chelev in the animal, as well as the Isur achilat basar, which all are incorporated in this under the rubric of nevela, they all get the dispensation of the Torah of nevela. So this heter of nevela is much broader than we would have otherwise thought. Nevela is not just nevela. It means nevela, chelev, gida nasher, all these items that are restricted in eating because they come from the animals. Way that they phrase it, and the way that Rashi phrases it, it's not nevela in the sense that only a Nevelah, the Chelev of a Nevelah, or only the Gida Nasheh Nevelah, which may not necessarily be true, but Nevelah has a bigger statement about what is Butar Behana'ah, and not just Nevelah. Nevelah means anything that was Asur Be'achilah in this manner, like the Nevelah, similar to the Nevelah. And that's Nevelah, Gida Nasheh, Chelev. They're all in that same category of Isur Achilah that comes from a non-kosher part of the animal. So all of those are incorporated under Nevelah, not just from Nevelah. Even if it comes from a kosher animal, it'll still have that same dispensation. As Rashi says, Lo shna Nevelah, Lo shna Ksheira. Doesn't make any difference whether it's a Nevelah or a Ksheira. All of these have the same heter or dispensation to get Hana from them. It's an interesting type of limud. It's not so clear or not so easy to see how the Gemara incorporates, or how Rabbi Bar incorporates all of them under the term or under the terminology of Nevelah. So Gemara says, Hanicha lemandamar yesh begidim benotein tam. Now you can say that Gida Nasheh is a subset of Nevelah if you believe that Gida Nasheh, the restriction against eating Gida Nasheh, is because the Gida Nasheh is a type of flesh. It's a type of meat. It's a type of item that one normally eats. And since one normally eats it, then it's also like nevela. If it's like neva, then you can have a heter anah. According to one who says that the gidin asher is like a piece of wood, it has no flavor, it has no sense of basar to it, and it's just a gzerat hakatuv. The gzerat hakatuv is you may not eat the gidin asher. Nothing to do with the fact that it's basar or it has any flavor to it. Then you have a problem over here, because here it's clearly not a subset of nevela, because it's not even in the world of basar. It's not in the world of flesh, as opposed to maybe chelev or basar or gidin asher. If it has no tintam, that could be a subset of nevela. If you say ein begidim no tintam, there's certainly not a subset of nevela. So ma'ika the meimar. So then, how would you explain it in that case? So the Gemara says, man shmaitle damar ein begidim no tintam. Who's the author of that position that gidim don't have any flavor to them, are not a shem basar? That is Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, d'tanya. Ochel migidin asher shel behemat me'ah, one who eats the gidin asher from a non-kosher animal. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev shtayim. Rabbi Yehuda says, you're chayav two isurim, one isur because of gidin asher, and another isur because of isur nevela. You have both problems there. You have a problem of nevela because it's part of the basar of a non-kosher animal, and you have a separate problem, which is that you have a problem of gidin asher. Rabbi Shimon poter. Rabbi Shimon says you're patur in that case because, number one, the isur of gidin asher only applies to cases where you could eat the basar. So gidin asher is your usur gidin asher, implying that you could eat the basar. So therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, the Isur of Gidin Asher only applies to kosher animals or animals that you could otherwise eat the basar. Number two is, it doesn't have a classification of nevela. It doesn't have a classification of nevela because it doesn't have a shem basar to it. Since it doesn't have a shem basar, it's not classified as nevela. So therefore, you're patur the gamre over there. There is no Isur that you're violating in eating Gidin Asher from a non-kosher animal. So then we've determined that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is the author of that position that be'en begidim no tintam. Shem chanami dasur ba'ana'a. Because Rabbi Shimon, who also is the one who says en begidim no tintam, is the one who says that it's osur b'ana, meaning that he's consistent in that position. The Tanya, gidin asher mutar b'ana, divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda believes that you can get benefit from the gidin asher. Rabbi Shimon oser. Rabbi Shimon says you cannot get hana from the gidin asher. So what ends up happening here is exactly what we expected. Someone who has the restriction of al kein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael et gidin asher, lo yochlu should generate with it an isur achila and an isur hana'a. So Rabbi Bau says, Eino chanami, you're right. It does generate. It generates an isur achila, generates an isur hana'a. So according to Rabbi Shimon, that's exactly what you end up with. You end up with an isur achila and you end up with an isur hana'a. Because the gidin asher is something that is restricted. It has no shaykhut to nevela. It's not connected to nevela at all. And since it's an independent restriction or an independent isur, therefore, if you say lo yochlu by the isur, it means isur hana and isur achila, and that's exactly what you get from Rabbi Shimon. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, who says it's mutar b'hana'a, who will be the author of our position over here, that you're allowed to give it to the nachri, Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutar b'hana'a, also believes that gidin asher is basar. It's like a nevela. And truthfully, if you have a gidin asher from a nevela, you're going to be chayav. Not only for gidin asher, you're also going to be chayav for the isur nevela. So if it's incorporated or subsumed under the Isur of Nevela, that means it also gets the dispensation of Nevela. The dispensation of Nevela is that Nevela is Mutar Bahana. Those are the psukim that Rabbi Bo brings. And so therefore, Rabbi Huda is of the conclusion that Gidin Asher is Mutar Bahana, despite the fact that the term that is used by it is Akin Lo Yochlu B'nei Yisrael Et Gidin Asher. So we'll have two opinions. We'll have Rabbi Huda's opinion who says that it's like a Nevela, and therefore it's Mutar Bahana. And Rabbi Shimon who says it's not like a Nevela, and therefore it's also Asur Bahana. And that will not be a problem for Rabbi Yebo, because the one who says it's mutar b'hana compares it to nevela. The one who says it's asur b'hana doesn't compare it to nevela, and you end up exactly where you would expect from Rabbi Yebo. The one thing to note over here is that the Gemara takes it for granted that Rabbi Yehuda is doshita that says that the author of this Mishnah that we brought, sholeach adam yirach l'nachri v'gidin asher b'tocho, that he's the author of that position. That is not so simple that he's the author of that position. Because if you look in the Tosafot, Rabbi Shimon Ami Meisar Asur Banana, it says, Mashma Dai Sholech Yirach L'Nachri Atik Rabbi Yehuda. So Hiksha Hariva. Daha Rabbi Yehuda Atile Bepera Kama De Mesechet De Buzara Asur Liten Lehem Matnot Chinam. Rabbi Yehuda over there is the author of the position of Lo Techanein, which is, do not give them chain. You're not allowed to give a matnat chinam to a goy. That is the position of Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Over here it says, Sholeach Adam and Yerach Lenachri. You're sending it over to Nachri. You're not getting any compensation in return. That is giving a gift to a Nachri. How could this be authored by Rabbi Yehuda if Rabbi Yehuda is the author of a position in Avodah Zarah says that you may not give a gift to a Nachri without compensation, that is Asur? So Tosafot says over here, V'yish Lomar, it's a very important Tosafot, Da Adamar Hatam Im Hayash Cheino Mutar Mipnei Shehu K'mochro Lo. Based on the position in the Tosefta that if he's your neighbor, then you're allowed to give it to him. Well, why are you allowed to give it to your neighbor? If you're not allowed to give free gifts to the Nachri, why is it giving to your neighbor permitted? So the Tosefta says it's ilu machro lo, because it's the equivalent of selling it to him. And that is because when you do some things in time, sometimes you do something and you just give it out of goodwill, and that's it. But there's sometimes when you give something, the goodwill that you're generating is to cause a quid pro quo, which is that the party who receives the object will now give you something in return. So if that's the case, you're really bartering goodwill. If you're bartering goodwill, that already becomes a mechira. That becomes a sale, and that's important here. This Tosafot gives a huge dispensation in terms of interacting with a Nachri. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it says it's asur to give gifts to a Nachri. It's asur to give a item for free to the Nachri. That's only in a situation where you don't expect anything in return for that gift. If you're given the gift, and that's it, out of the goodness of your heart, that's a problem. But if it generates a certain amount of goodwill, and that goodwill, you have an expectation to receive something in return for that goodwill. For instance, with neighbors. With the neighbors, you're going to come to expect if you do something for your neighbor will then do the same in return. That's really a bartering of goodwill, and that means that you really did a mechira. Now, again, you have to have some sort of relationship with this individual so that when you gift them, that you could expect something in return. But that is a huge het there here in the Tosafot in terms of matnat chinam to a goy, that matnat chinam doesn't just mean that you can't give any gifts. It means you can't give a gift when there's no expectation of return for that gift. In addition, Hikshari, Dorleans, Heichi Matzi Atik Rabbi Yehuda Itle, Beper Gidin Asher, the Gidin Asher Asur Livnei Noach. So now, how could you give this to the goy? You're giving it over to the goy, and we know, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that even Bnei Noach are Asurim in Gidin Asher. That turns out, now you as a Jew are handing a Gidin Asher to an Achri, and he's going to eat it. It's a problem of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. You're now giving Isur to the goy, which he might consume now. You're providing him something that is of Isur. So the Re over here answers the question and says, when it says Lifnei Noach over there, it doesn't mean that there's an Isur Gidin Asher for non-Jews. That's not what he means. Nobody believes, he says, that a non-Jew is restricted in Gidin Asher. But rather, the Pasuk is found by Bnei Yaakov. By Bnei Yaakov, it says, Al ken yochlu Bnei Yisrael et Gidin Asher. That pasuk is found in Sefer Breshit. And so Rabbi Yehuda's position is, since it was not repeated at Sinai, that Isur applies even to Bnei Yisrael or Bnei Yaakov, Lifnei Matan Torah. So the Bnei Noach that we're speaking about here are not Bnei Noach, as we know in other places, meaning non-Jews, but Bnei Noach over here means Bnei Yaakov, meaning those that have the status of Bnei Noach, Lifnei Matan Torah, but are Jews. That's Bnei Yaakov. So Bnei Yisrael, before Matan Torah, were restricted in Gidin Asher. But it doesn't mean that there's a broader Isur on Ben Noach, meaning on non-Jews, to eat Gidin Asher. So the two important things that come out from this Tosafot over here. No, because Lifnei Iver is not that he has to know that the Isur is there. You're facilitating. Lifnei Iver, Liten Mikshol, we're going to get to in the second half of today's daf, is to facilitate an Avera. Doesn't matter if he knows or he doesn't know. I mean, if he doesn't know, it's especially problematic. But if he knows about it, but you know that he's going to eat it, that's also Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mikshol. Just because he makes the choice to eat it doesn't mean that you're not in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mikshol, because you're facilitating his ability to eat it. So it does not mean that he doesn't know about it. It means that you are a facilitator of the Avera, which he otherwise might not have been able to do. The question of what facilitating means is a Machloket HaRishonim. Right. V'arei Dam, the Rachmana Amar. What about Dam, that the Torah says, Kol nefesh mikem lo tochal dam, that nobody may consume, eat the blood. So here you have lo tochal. You would expect that be associated with this is an Isur Hana'ah and an Isur Achila, according to Rabbi Abau. It's not. On the other hand, we have a Mishnah in Yoma, that says, Elu ve'elu mitarvim ba'ama, when you pour the shirei hadam, the leftovers of the dam, from whether it's the karbonot that were brought bifnim, or karbonot that were brought on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, they are poured into the Yisod HaMizbeach. Yisod HaMizbeach, there are two holes in the Yisod HaMizbeach, one on the Tzad Maravi, one on the Tzad Dromi, one on the southern side, one on the western side. They're adjacent to each other. They're in the southwestern corner. And any korban that was brought lifnim, the Shari Adam, the remainder of blood is poured onto that western hole. And if it was from the leftover blood of a korban that was brought on Mizbeach Yitzon, it's poured into the hole on the southern side. There, the Gemara describes, once it's been poured into the Yisod HaMizbeach in these two places, mitarvim be'ama. They mix together in the ama. Question of what the be'ama means. Does it mean within an ama of pouring it in there, they mix together? Or is the ama referred to the ama? There's an ama in the mikdash, which was basically the sewage line. Out of the mikdash, there was a water-flowing sewage line. That mitarvim be'ama means that they then flow into the ama. They flow into the sewage line that takes it out of the Beit HaMikdash. So then it flows into the ama. And that ama, that sewage line, takes it v'yotzim le'nachal Kidron. It goes out to Nachal Kidron. Nachal Kidron doesn't necessarily mean the river of Kidron, but Nachal Kidron means the valley of Kidron. It goes out there. If you go to the southern excavations today, there is a staircase on that side of the Beit HaMikdash in the southern excavations, which actually has a sewage line that drives down the middle. And they did do testing on that sewage line, comes out, and they did find cells from animal blood that went there. And it was very likely part of that drainage system that went out of the Mikdash down towards Nachal Kidron. So it's interesting just to note that the Gemara here is describing something that now in archaeology they see that there was such a drainage line that's coming out from the Mikdash towards Nachal Kidron. Now this blood flows into Nachal Kidron, v'nikarim the gananim, the zevel. So then the farmers or the gardeners buy it as good fertilizer because it's got the blood in it. The blood has a good mixture of proteins and minerals for the earth. And because of that, they buy it as a fertilizer. Umalimbo. If they don't purchase it, if they don't pay for it, then there's mi'ila. As Tosafot points out over here, the mi'ila we're speaking about here is mi'ila derabanan. It's not mi'ila d'oraita, because mina Torah, anything that has its mitzvah done to it, no longer has a din of mi'ila. Here, the mitzvah was already done. The korban was already brought. The blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach, and the shari adam was poured onto the yisod mizbeach. So here, the mitzvah is done. So there's no mi'ila d'oraita, but there's mi'ila derabanan, because it looks like you're benefiting from kodesh. So they used to sell it to the farmers, meaning that the money would go to hekdesh. So hekdesh would benefit from selling it to the farmers because of this Easter mi'ilad rabbanan. So what you see from here is that they're allowed to gain benefit from this dam. The fact that the dam flows out and they buy it and use it as fertilizer shows you that there's no Easter hana over here, despite the fact that the way that the Easter dam is formulated is called nefesh mikem lo tochal dam. So even though it's formulated as an Easter achila, why is there permission to do or get hana'a from this? That is against Rabbi Bo's position. So Gemara says, Shani Dam Deit Kash Lamayim. Dam is different because it has a parallel, or there's a hekesh between it and Mayim and water. Dichtiv, Lo Tochlenu Al Haaretz Tishpachenu Kamayim. You may not eat the blood, you spill it on the floor like water. So like water means that it has the same properties as water. Mayim Mayim Mutarim, Av Dam Mutar. Just like water is Mutar Ba'ana, so too Dam is Mutar Ba'ana. So again, here you have a special dispensation with the Gabei blood that should have been otherwise Asur Ba'ana. The fact that the Torah compares it to Mayim makes it that it is now Mutar Behana'ah. What's interesting over here is that Gemara is talking about Dam Kodoshim. The mission that they brought from Yoma is Dam Kodoshim. We just learned previously in Rav Chanina Skana Kohanim that with regards to Dam Kodoshim, they don't have the classification of Al Haaretz Tishpachenu Kamayim. That was the exact distinction that the Gemara drew, that Dam in the Mikdash is not Makhshir because it does not have a din of Mayim. So Tosafot over here says that it's a Mare Mokom or Gilui Milta, which is that we have a restriction against eating blood of chulin, and we have a restriction against eating blood of kodoshim. So it's just like the Torah shows you by the blood of chulin that it's asur b'achila, but mutar b'hana'ah, because that you learn out from the pasuk of la'aretz tishpachenu kamayim. So too, the Easter achila of dam by kodoshim has that same formulation, which is it's only asur b'achila, mutar b'hana'ah, but not that the Gemara can draw a direct correlation between the two of them, because dam kodoshim doesn't have the din of Al Haaretz Tishpachenu Kamayim. Now Gemara says, Ve'ema kemayim mitnaschim al gabei hamizbeach. So how do you know that the water we're speaking about over here is just water that you drink? You go to the water fountain, you drink the water, and therefore it's mutar b'ana. Maybe it's talking about the water that they pour as libations on the mizbeach. If that's the case, then dam is being compared to water of libations. Water of libations are asurim. So too the dam should be asur. Marzam Rabbi Bo, kemayim rov mayim. And it says like water, it means like the majority of water in the world. The majority of water in the world is mutar. So Gemara says, amidei rov mayim ktiv? It doesn't say majority of water in the pasuk. It just says water. Elo amar avashi, kemayim anishpachim. It's like water that's spilled. Velo kemayim anisachim. You're talking about two different verbs over here. Nishpach is something that's thrown on the ground, meaning that it's spilled out without any intent of utility. Nisachim is when you have intent of libation. That is a religious practice. That is not something that you just nishpach, you just pour it out willy-nilly. That's something where you have intent involved with it and involves some sort of religious action. So there's a difference between nishpach and nisach. The fact that the Torah phrases it as nishpach indicates to you that this is mayim that is not being used in that way or as a libation. So Vagmar says, Vema kamayim nishpachim lifnei avodah zarah. Well, maybe it's not nisachim, maybe it's not water libations in the Mikdash, but maybe it's water libations that are poured in front of a Zvodah Zarah. And over there, maybe the nishpachim is the appropriate term. So it says, Hatamnami nusuch ikre. Even though water libations to Avodah Zarah are not a religious practice, nevertheless, they are a religious practice, despite the fact that they don't have any standing, lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in terms of the Avodah Zarah, since it's done as a religious practice in front of the Avodah Zarah, the terminology that is used is nisuch, despite the fact that it's not really the right way to do it. And that we can prove from Parshat Hazino, which says, Ikrei Dichtiv, Pasuk says, Ishtu Yen Nisicham, that they drink the wine of their libations. So you see, even though the libation there is referring to being poured before Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, the word nisuch is still used in the practice of bringing wine, or if it would be water as well, in front of Avodah Zarah. Olechizkiah. What about Chizkiah? Lamai Hilchoto Ikish Dam Lamayim. Now we understand why there's a Hekesh for Rabbi Abou between Dam and Mayim, because otherwise Rabbi Abou would have a problem with Dam. Dam would be Asur Ba'ana'ah. So he needs the Hekesh to Mayim to get him the Heter Hana'ah. But Chizkiah never has the Isur Hana'ah because it doesn't say Lo Yachel by the Dam. So he only has an Isur Achila. He doesn't have an Isur Hana'ah. So what is he going to do with this Hekesh between Dam and Mayim? That is, Kedra B'chir Ba'ava, which we saw in the previous parak, Dam Rabbi Ba'ava, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Minayin Ladam Kodoshim, Sheinu Machshir. How do we know that Dam Kodoshim is not Machshir, something to Mekabel Tuma, that it does not have a status of a liquid, does not have a status of Mayim? Shenemar lo tochlen ol aretz tishpachenu kamayim. Dam shenishpach l'mayim Machshir. Blood that is spilled out like water, that has the properties to be Machshir, the Kabel Tuma. That's considered to be a Mashke. But shenu nishpach l'mayim, something that's not poured like water, ain't a Machshir. That's not Machshir. And Dam Kodoshim has to have Kabbalat Adam. You have to capture it and you have to do something with it. Therefore, it does not have the standing of a mashke that can be machshir the kabel tuma. All right, next question. Varei Eiver Minachai. By Eiver Minachai, dichtiv lo tochal anefesh ima basar. You're not allowed to eat the life along with the basar. Here's a reference to Eiver Minachai, that one may not eat of an animal while it's still alive. V'tanya, Rabbi Natan Omer, minayin shelo yoshit adam kos yain lenazir, ve'Eiver Minachai livnei Noach. How do I know? From where do I know that a person may not pass a cup of wine to a Nazir and may not provide Eiver Minachai to a Ben Noach, to a non-Jew? Talmud Lomar, Lifnei Iver, Lo Titein Michshol. One may not put a stumbling block before a blind person. So now, the Lifnei Iver, Lo Titein Michshol means not the literal sense of Lifnei Iver, Lo Titein Michshol may not put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, but one may not cause another person to do something wrong. You may not give bad advice. You may not provide a person the ability or facilitate their ability to do something wrong. That is the greater understanding of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. It's just interesting that many of the Rishonim believe that if, for instance, a person did put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, they would not be chayav. That there is no Isur Malkot in that case. Because they believe the pshat and the pasuk of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol is not to take the pasuk literally, but the drusha is the pashtut ha-pasuk. And therefore, the existence of the basic Isur, of the literal meaning of the Pasuk, does not exist anymore. Right, we wouldn't recommend it, but it may not fall under an Isur Deraita, or you may not get Makot for such an Isur. There are Rishonim who want to argue that there's still the Pashtuta Pasuk still exists, because there are actually two Pasukim of Lifnei Ver Lo Titen Michshol, and that is because it appears once in Pashat Kedoshim by Lifnei Ver Lo Titen Michshol, and also appears again in Parshat Kitovo, which is Arur Mashke Iver Badarech. So there is a second Isur that applies to an Iver, and therefore some of the Rishonim are willing to say that the Pashtuta Pasuk also exists in one of these two Isurim, and the Drusha only applies to one of the two. And therefore, if you did put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, you would be Chayav in that case. But what the Gemara is Medayik from here is, Hada Klavim Shari. That the only restriction here is giving it to a Bardat, is to giving it to someone who is restricted in eating it. But a Kelev, who's not restricted from eating Eiver Minachai, that you would be permissible to do that. So therefore, you would see, there's a Heter Hana'ah with regards to Eiver Minachai, despite the fact that the Isur that is brought by there is an Isur that involves Lo Tochal, that you may not eat it. So Rabbi Abou, that should have included not only an Isur Achilah, but should also involve an Isur Hana'ah. Despite that fact, the only restriction in Eiver Minachai seems to be that you're in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. Had it not been for the Easter of Lifnei Iver, Lo Titen Michshol, then you would have been perfectly fine in giving it to the Nachri. You would have been perfectly fine in providing it to anyone else. And that's the equivalent of giving it to your dog, meaning that it would be mutar behana'ah. And that provides a problem for Rabbi Abou. Now, just to focus on Lifnei Iver, Lo Titen Michshol, this Gemara is very important over here because It introduces an interesting situation. One of the situations is handing a cup of wine to the Nazir. That the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Vav Amud Bet mentions that Isur of giving the wine to the Nazir is only when he's betray Evrei Denaro, when he's on the other side of the river. He cannot access the wine without you. You are now facilitating his ability to drink the wine, and therefore you're in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titichon Mechshol because you are providing the wine for him. Now, what is considered to be Trei Evrei Denaro, most of the Rishonim believe over there, Trei Evrei Denaro means that without you, this individual would not have access to the item. But if the individual had access to the item even without you, that doesn't mean that he has to have it in his possession currently. He just has equal access to it. He could go and buy it in the store. So your handing it to him may not be facilitating it any more than him buying it. Now, if he's underage and he couldn't have gone to the store and bought it, now when you're providing him the wine, you're facilitating something that he otherwise couldn't have done himself. There are others like the Gra believe that when it means that he has it, it means that he literally has to have it in his possession. Not that he has to physically be holding it now, but it has to be within his possession. It's not that it's equally accessible to him. It has to be that he does own it already, but it doesn't have to be presently in his hand. So that's one thing, or one important factor in Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol. Now, even if you're not in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol, many of the Rishonim believe that there's a secondary Avira, most likely Dirabanan. The Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot, Sin Tumot, seems to mention it as an Issur D'Oraita, brings a Pasuk as a proof to it. But most of the Rishonim believe that it's an Issur D'Rabanan, which is Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira. Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira means that you may not be a participant, you may not be an accomplice to the violation of an Avira. And over there, being an accomplice to Avira is whether or not the person could have done it without you. That restriction or that dispensation by Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol may not apply over here. Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol means you're a facilitator. So if you're not the facilitator, you're not in violation of that. Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira means that you're an accomplice to the crime. It means that simply if you're a participant in this, that's enough to render it asur for you. So whether that exists, there's a machloket in the Rishonim, whether there is such concept of Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira. In the end, the Rama brings down both opinions about Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira, and he paskins Lahakel, but he says Bal Nefesh Yachmir, that a Bal Nefesh will be careful not to be Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira. Over there, the Shach disagrees with the Rama, and the Shach says that I can explain to you the difference in all the Rishonim. This issue of Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira is the difference between a Nachri and a Jew. The Isur or Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira, all the Rishonim, when they mention Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira, only mention a reference to a Jew. So there is an Isur of Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira when you're dealing with a Jew. When you're dealing with a Nachri, there is an Isur of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol, but there is no restriction of Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira. That's the way the Shach reconciles between all the Rishonim and shows that he thinks the Rama is wrong, and he thinks that this issue of Misayeya Le'ovrei Avira is really a difference between whether it's a Nachri or a Jew. Yeah, so that's it's a Mishnayot and Shvi'it. The Mishnayot and Shvi'it discuss what you're saying, and that is, can you sell, for instance, a plow to an Amah Aretz during the Shvi'it? Can you sell an animal to an Amah Aretz during the Shvi'it? So there, the Gemara says that it depends on what the possible utility of that item is. If the only utility of that item is for that person to do an Isur, then you certainly cannot sell it to him. If there are other possibilities of utility for that individual, then that's not a problem with Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol, because you can make the assumption that he's not going to do the Isur, that he's going to buy it for the Heter purposes. Now, if you know he's going to do it for the Isur, then it's problematic. But if there are what we call Tliyah, the ability to assume that there are other possibilities of what he will utilize it for, then there isn't a problem with Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol. Now, the important thing here, and this is what I wanted to focus on, is the second example over here. The second example of here, Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol, is a case where you provide Eiver Min HaChai to a Goy, which means that there's also an Isur of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol with regards to a non-Jew, which is pretty amazing, because there is a basic Chakira within Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol as to what is the restriction of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol. The two formulations that the Rishonim have, it's based on the Rishonim in the Perek Ben Sorer Omer with regards to Yehereg Ve'al Yavor. It's the question, what's included under the Isur of Yehereg Ve'al Yavor? So without getting into that too deeply, the Rishonim over there have two types of descriptions of what's considered to be Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol. One way to describe Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol is that it's an independent Avera. It stands on its own. It's basically like another Isur Ben Adam Lechaviro. It's an obligation of a Hafel Re'acha Kamocha, that you have to treat your friend in a certain way, and we have certain expectations of you. One of those expectations is Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mechshol, that you're not going to give him bad advice. You're not going to cause him to do an Avera. So it's a standalone Avera. Number one, that has implications in terms of the severity of the Isur. That means if it's an independent isur, it's an isur, and the severity of the isur won't change with what you're facilitating. So even if you facilitate an aveira that's karet, or you facilitate an aveira that's makot, in the eyes of the Torah, those are both the same, because there's only one isur here, which is the isur of lifnei iver lo titen mikshol. That's if it stands alone as an independent aveira. The other view in the Rishonim is that lifnei iver lo titen mikshol is what we call a snif l'chol aveira ve'aveira. It's an extension on every aveira. Lifnei iver lo titen mikshol is basically embedded in every avira. Not only does every avira carry with it an isur, every avira also carries with it a restriction against you facilitating that avira for another person. And if that's the case, the severity of the isur would actually change with depending on what the isur is. So if it was a chiyuv karet, the isur lifnei iver lo titen mikshol in that case would be much more problematic than it is if it was just an isur lav, since lifnei iver lo titen mikshol is deriving its isur from the isur itself. It has the same properties as the isur. And therefore, lifnei iver lo titen mikshol will move along with those items. Now, why that is important is over here, because the Gemara over here says that there's a problem with lifnei iver lo titen mikshol legabei nachri, legabei a non-Jew. Well, how do you explain that? How is there an isur of lifnei iver lo titen mikshol for a nachri? So if you say that it's an independent isur, that makes it very difficult, because it's basically a requirement of ben adam lechaveiro. It's an obligation between you and your fellow Jew. So why does a nachri play in this at all? It doesn't make so much sense. If it's an independent isur and it's an obligation towards your fellow Jew, then why does a lifnei iver lo titen mikshol have anything to do with the nachri? So that would be very difficult for that position. Even according to the position that says that it's a snif l'chol avira ve'avira, that it's an expansion of avira, that's also interesting, because Avraham Menachai is one of the shiva mitzvot b'nei Noach. And that would be a question the Gemara in Sanhedrin deals with, is what is a Jew's obligation vis-a-vis the shiva mitzvot b'nei Noach? How do we look at it? We have 613 mitzvot. B'nei Noach have 7 mitzvot. What is our relationship between those 7 mitzvot and the 613 mitzvot? There are two ways to look at that. The Gemara there deals with this question. One way is to say, there's the Shiva mitzvot B'nei Noach. Once we got the 613 mitzvot, the Shiva mitzvot Noach are no longer applicable to us. We have a new set of rules. Those set of rules are the 613 mitzvot. The other way to look at it is to suggest that the 613 mitzvot are really 7 plus 606, which is that when we got 613 mitzvot, we have the original Shiva mitzvot B'nei Noach, and then on top of that, we have another additional 606 mitzvot that get us to the 613. So a Jew is really a Ben Noach plus. So now, if you have that view that a Jew is a Ben Noach plus, then it's much easier to understand over here why a Jew would have a problem if he caused a Ben Noach to sin. Because you really are Shayach. You have a relationship with the Averot B'nei Noach, because you're also, in a sense, a Ben Noach plus. A Jew is not just a Jew, he's a Ben Noach plus. And if that's the case, then you have a relationship to the Isur of Avraham Menachai of the non-Jew, just like it is for a Jew. So in that case, you could explain it. But if you say that Jews have no shaychut to the mitzvah B'nei Noach, or you say lifnei iver lo titen mikshol is an independent mitzvah, then you have a much harder time explaining why you have a responsibility towards the goy to prevent him from sinning. So you would have to explain in that instance that lifnei iver lo titen mikshol is not simply a din of ben adam lechaveiro, but also has an aspect of ben adam lemakom, and that there's an obligation for you not only to take care of your fellow Jew or to be a good neighbor, but there's also an obligation in lifnei iver lo titen mikshol is to make sure there's a kiddush Hashem, to make sure that people abide by the laws of Hashem. And that lifnei iver lo titen mikshol incorporates within it that obligation to ensure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And that could apply equally to a Jew and a non-Jew. So I just know that's important, because the Gemara here mentions, it does in other places as well, the idea that lifnei iver lo titen mikshol applies to B'nai Noach, applies to non-Jews as well, and that is a very important factor in lifnei iver lo titen mikshol. The last thing is in Isurei Derabanan. Mitchat Chinuch asks with regards to what happens if a person causes another person to violate an Isur Derabanan. Is it possible that when you cause a person to violate an Isur Derabanan, that you're also in violation of an Isur Deoraita? Would be pretty interesting. You're causing someone to do an Aveira Midrabanan, and now you're in violation of an Isur Doraita because you're causing them to do an Isur Drabanan. So if you see it as an expansion or a sniff, the Chol Mitzvah Mitzvah, it would be very hard to say that, because if he's violating an Isur Drabanan, you're also violating an Isur Drabanan, not an Isur Doraita. If you see it as an independent mitzvah, then it's more likely that, or possible, that you could be in violation of an Isur Doraita even with an Isur Drabanan. That the Minchat Chinuch has a safek. Rav Soloveitchik, I heard once from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein when I was speaking on the topic of Lifnei Iver. He stopped me in the middle and he said, after I had mentioned the Minchat Chinuch, he said, Rav Soloveitchik always used to say that he doesn't understand the safek of the Minchat Chinuch, because he says, everybody agrees in Lifnei Iver lo titen mikshol, it also includes giving bad advice. It doesn't just include causing someone to do an aveira, it's also giving bad advice to someone. And he says that causing a person to violate an Isur Drabanan should be no worse than bad advice. So if you give bad advice, you're in violation of Doraita, then why causing someone to violate an Isur Drabanan should be no worse than bad advice, and you should be in violation of Isur Doraita? And he didn't see the room for this safek of the Minchat Chinuch. But Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a very mechudash view of the Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol. Every time we mention this, I always mention this of Shlomo Zalman, and that is because if you look in isolation at any one Avira, then you have to ask a person, if you go and do this for this individual, if you bring them into this situation, are they going to sin or are they not going to sin? That comes up, for instance, in issues with Kiruv. You invite somebody to come over for Shabbat to participate in the Shabbat meal. You know that if you invite them over, they're going to drive. They're going to violate the Shabbat to come participate in the meal with you. Is that permitted? So Rav Moshe, in his Tshuvot, Rav Moshe Feinstein, mentions that you have to give him the ability to sleep over. You have to invite him. You have to do things that basically take away the problem of Trei Evre Denara. You have to do it in a way that doesn't force him to violate the Shabbat. It's a little bit fine line because in many instances, even if you provide and you offer him all that, you know that he's not going to take it up. But the fact that you offer it may be enough. That's the shita of Moshe Feinstein. On the other hand, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in the Tshuva has a much more holistic view of Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol. He says you cannot look at Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol in any single Avera. You can't look at it in isolation and say, okay, well now the Gabei Shabbat, this individual is going to be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol. You can't do that. But you have to look at it in a much more holistic view, which is when you bring this person over for Shabbat and then that warms them up and now they're going to do more mitzvot, in a grander scale, in a more macro view, there's no Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol here. You're actually facilitating this individual becoming closer to Judaism. So despite the minor infractions of the Shabbat that come to facilitate it, nevertheless, you are not in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol. It's a big chiddush of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. It's used by many Kiruv organizations, and it's a very important view of this holistic view of Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol. The people just have to be careful, even if you use the view of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, you have to be careful when you tread on those lines, whether a person, at some point, you are actually condoning their behavior, which is that if you keep inviting them for Shabbat and allow them to drive, that they may not think there is anything wrong with driving. So there is a fine line between condoning the behavior of the individual versus bringing the person closer to Judaism, and in, a holistic or more macro view, you're actually bringing them closer, and there's no violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Teiten Michshol. So Gemara says over here, so what about the Zeiver Min HaChai? What am I going to do about the fact that there is no Isur Hana over here, despite the fact that it uses the term Lo Tochal? So Gemara says, Shani Eiver Min HaChai, Deit Kish Ledam. Eiver Min HaChai is compared to Dam. Dichtiv, Rachazak, Devotil Achol Adam. In the same Pasuk, there's Lo Tochal Nefesh, Ima Basar, Pasuk continues, Rachazak, Devotil Achol Adam. So within the same Pasuk, you have an Isur of Achilat Dam, as well as the Isur of Achilat Eiver Min HaChai. Ki Adam Hu Anefesh. Because the Dam is a Nefesh. So we already know by Dam, that we already have this dispensation, that dam, because it's ala eretz tishbechenu kamayim, so it doesn't have an isur hana with it. So the hekesh between dam and eiver min HaChai gives us that heter, or that dispensation, to apply also to eiver min HaChai. So just like dam does not have an isur hana associated with it, so too eiver min HaChai does not have an isur hana associated with it. So yes, the word lo tochal does engender an isur hana. Despite the fact that it engenders an isur hana, I have a hekesh to dam, which then takes away that isur hana. Uli Chizkiah. Well, now, Chizkiah, who never had the Isur Hana'ah, why does he need the Hekesh between Dam and Eiver Min HaChai? The Mayhukhata Itkish Eiver Min HaChai, the Dam. Then why is there such a Hekesh? Amalacha, Dam hu de Itkish Eiver Min HaChai. That Dam is compared to Eiver HaChai. Mai Eiver HaChai Asur, Av Dam Min HaChai Asur. That comes to teach you that this restriction of Eiver Min HaChai is not simply about an Eiver, but also has to do with Dam Min HaChai. And that the Isur of Dam doesn't just apply to Dam, but there's a separate Isur of Dam Min HaChai. And therefore, that's why there's a comparison between Eiver Min HaChai and Dam Min HaChai. Ve'ezu zeh, and what is considered to be Dam Min HaChai, zeh Dam HaKazah. That's the blood of the Kazav, the neck of the arteries, Shanefesh Yotzah Bo, that the life force leaves with it, that the Gemara describes in other places. That's as long as the blood is shooting out. When the blood is pulsating out of the animal, that blood is considered to be Dam Shanefesh Yotzah Bo, and that Dam has a din of Dam Min HaChai. Doesn't just have the restriction of not eating blood, but also has a separate restriction of Dam Min HaChai. And that comes from this hekesh between Eiver Min HaChai and Dam. So now the Gemara moves on to the next question. So Harei Shoran Niskal, the Rachman Amar. So over here, as opposed to the previous questions, which were all on Rabbi Abbahu, this question over here is on Rabbi Abbahu and Chizkiah, because over there it says, Lo ye achel et bisaro. When it comes to a Shoran Niskal, a shor that is put to death because it killed an individual, or because it was involved in a veirah, it requires a death penalty for the animal as well, bestiality. So, lo yachelet bisaro, one may not eat the flesh. V'tanya, the Brita says, Mimash, Mashenema, Sakol, Yisakel, Ashur, you have to stone the animal. So then, Eni Yodea, Shi, Nevela. So what's the result of an animal that's stoned and dead? Well, then it's a Nevela. So of course, a Nevela is Surah Be'achila. And a Nevela cannot be eaten. So Ma Talmud Lomar, why does the Torah have to tell me, Lo Ye'achel, that you may not eat it? Of course you can't eat it. You didn't shecht it. There's no question that you can't eat it. So Ma Gilucha Katuv, so what is the Pasuk teaching you? Shim Shechato La'char Shnigmar Dino. That if you shecht the animal after the final verdict has been rendered for this animal that says that it's going to be put to death, asur. If you shecht it before it's put to death, then it's asur. Ainli ala ba'achila, that's only true ba'achila. Behana'a minayin. How do I know that it's also asur ba'ana'a? Talmud Omer v'alashur naki. That the v'alashur, the owner of the animal, is clean. So what does that mean? My mashma, what does that mean? Owner of the animal is clean. Shimon ben Zoma omer, kadam shomer l'chavero yatza ploni naki minichasav. Person's broke, meaning that he left all of his stuff behind. He's clean of all of his stuff. Clean of all his stuff means that he's left with nothing. So here, balashur naki means he's left with nothing. Menachem means ein lo behem hana shel klum, that you have no benefit from these items at all. So now this is a huge problem. The pasuk uses the term lo ye'achel. Lo ye'achel both for Rabbi Yehoshua and for Chizkiah means isur achila and isur hana. Despite that fact, taima dichtav rachmano balashur naki. The only reason we have an isur hana over here is because we have the extra line in the pasuk of balashur naki. Di lo ye'achel isur achila mashma isur hana lo mashma. Because had you simply had lo yachel, it seems from the braita, the only thing you would have here is an iser achila, no iser hana'ah. So that's a problem for both Rabbi Bo and for Chizkiah. So the olam, the Gemara says, no, lo yachel iser achila b'iser hana'ah, mashma. No, lo yachel means both aser b'achila, aser b'ana'ah, balashor naki. So then what do you need balashor naki for? That's the hanat orohu da'ata. That's from benefit from its skin. You would think that the only restriction of hana'ah here is has to do with the basar. Why would you think that? It says you may not eat its flesh. So you may not eat its flesh, then the Isur of Lo Yachel applies to the flesh. And Lo Yachel, which also generates the Isur Hana'ah, will also only apply to the flesh. So you would think that there's an Isur Achila and Hana'ah with regards to the Basar. But the Or, the skin, that wouldn't have a restriction of Isur Hana'ah. So that's what the Ubalashor Naki comes to teach you, is that also there's also a restriction with regards to the Or of the Behema. So I would have thought Bisaro in Orolo. Kamash Balon, that's what Balashur Naki comes to teach me, that even the Or is Asur Behana'ah. Ulahanach Tanae de Mafki Leila Haikra Ledrush Achrino. So those Tanaim, there's a machloket in the Gemara in Baba Kama, and they use Balashur Naki for other limudim. What are the limudim? The Chatzi Kofer. When it comes to an animal, animals, a shore can be either a tam or a mu'ad. A tam is an animal who is not accustomed to doing this activity. A mu'ad is an animal who's already done it three times, is accustomed to doing this activity. A mu'ad that kills an individual, kills a human being, the owner of the shor has to pay kofar, has to pay reparations to that individual's family. On the other hand, a shor tam that kills an individual, over there we have no din in the Torah with regards to that. What we do know about a shor tam is that a shor tam pays chatzi, pays half of what a shor mu'ad pays. So maybe you would think that a shor tam should also have to pay chatzi kofar. If he kills an individual, he has to pay half the kofar. So that's what Ubalashur Naki comes to teach you. Ubalashur Naki means that he's clean. He's totally clean. He doesn't have to pay anything. So not only is he not chayav in full kofar, he's not even chayav in chatzi kofar. Ulid mei v'ladot. And the same thing true. If a shur mu'ad causes a woman to miscarry, then the Balashur is responsible to compensate the husband of that woman for the miscarriage. On the other hand here, by a shur tam, if a shur tam causes a woman to miscarry, there is no chatzi v'ladot over here. They don't pay half the amount of the v'ladot. That is also learned out from Balashur Naki. So then, Hanat Oro Minaluhu. If they already use Balashur Naki for these other limudim, then where do they find the Isur Hanah for Or from? So Naflehu Me'et Bisaro. Because it says in the Pasuk, by Lo Yachel Et Bisaro. The word Et is a riboy. Et Hatafel Lipsaro. Et is a riboy that includes things that are secondary, tertiary to the Basar, and that would include the Or. So that's the word et. Et is a ribur, an inclusionary term. V'idach. Those that don't have that drasha and they learn it out of Balashur Naki, then what do they do with the word et? So they et lo darish. They're not darish et. They don't think the word et has significance. It's just phraseology. It's the normal way that you would say these things. You don't to make any significance out of the word et. Kedetanya. It's very interesting that the Gemara brings this down. Shimon Hamasoni. V'hamrila Nechemya Hamasoni. Haya Doresh Kolitim Shibetorah. He was Doresh. Every et in the Torah is being a ribui. Kevinshi Gia. He reached this pasuk. He didn't know what to do anymore. Et Hashem Elokecha Tira. One must fear God. Well, now you have a big problem. Because if you're coming to Mirabit something, there's nobody on the same plane as God. So how can you say et Hashem lokach tira? Who else are you going to put in the same category as God? So Perish, he said, I'm wrong. So Amru lo Talmidav, Rebbe, kol etim shedrashta mata elehen. All these etim that were doresh until this point in time, what's going to happen to them? Amru lem, kishem shekibalti schara ladrisha. Just like it was got schara, I got reward for delving into Torah, trying to put together something in the Torah. Kach ani mikra schara pisha. That there is a value in being honest. And the honesty space says over here that if et is a riboy, it has to be a riboy everywhere. And if I come to 99% of the time it works, and that 1% it doesn't work, that means that et is not a riboy. If it's not a riboy, I got to erase everything I did with the other 99%. So just like I got schar on what I did try to create, I will also get schar from walking around being honest that I realized that I was wrong. And I understand that the drashot that I made were incorrect. Ad Shabbat Rabbi Akiva, until Rabbi Akiva came, Midrash et Hashem lokach tira, he found a way to be doresh et Hashem lokach tira. The Rabbo Tamidei Chachamim, it comes to include Tamidei Chachamim, that's what found in the Mishnah in Avot, which is Morav Rabach Gemora Shamayim, that the fear of your Rebbe should be like the fear of heaven. So then he found something to do with that et, and that reestablished it. What's interesting here is that Gemara brings this as a proof to those that are not Doresh Et, that despite the fact that Rabbi Kiva in the end helps out Shimon Hamasoni, nevertheless, the Gemara views this as Shimon Hamasoni as being a person who says the et, we're not Doresh Et anymore. Despite the fact that the conclusion of the Gemara, and every time this is brought, Gemara also brings Rabbi Akiva, who says in the end, finds a way to save the drasha of Shimon HaMasoni. Okay, now the Gemara moves on again to another question. Again, once again, this question is on both Rabbi Abahu and Chizkiah, which is, Vare Orla, Damar Rachmana, Ramachon Amar, Arelim Lo Yeachel, one may not eat them. He uses the term Lo Yeachel. So for both Chizkiah and Rabbi Abahu, that would indicate both an Isur Achila and an Isur Hana. Vitanya, we have a Braisa, Arelim Lo Yeachel, Enli Ela Isur Achila. From the word le'ochel, I would have thought there's only a restriction against eating it. How do I know that you also may not get hana from it? That you may not use it as a dye. And you will not kindle a candle with it. You won't use the shemen or vorla to light a lamp. So the additional riboy of the lashon of varaltem arloto, the rabotet kulam, to include all of these different types of hana'ah. So there's a couple of interesting things here. Number one is that there's a question that Breiter clearly sees Lo Yachel as being simply an Isur Achila and requires an additional Varaltem Arlato to generate the Isur Hana'ah, which will go against both against Chizkiah and Rabbi Abahu. Number two is when the Breiter lists, it says, oh, how do I know it's Usur Bahana'ah? And how do I know it's Usur to dye it? And how do I know it's Usur to light a candle with it? Why isn't dyeing it and lighting the candle also just an Isur Hana'ah? Those are just subsets of Isur Hana'ah. Why does the Braita give three examples here? It gives Isur Hana'ah, then dying, and then lighting the candle. So Tosafot says that those two are chiddush, because you would think that dying is not a real Hana'ah, because the only thing that you do with the dying is that you generate a color. That color is Hana'ah through Chazuta, through sight. It's just you see a color. So maybe that Hana'ah is not considered to be real Hana'ah, so that's why the Gemara has to separate it out from a normal Isur Hana'ah. The same is true with kindling a lamp. That over there we have in other places that we know that when you eliminate, for instance, Trumat Me'ah, when you burn it, there's a din of Sreifa that you can get benefit from while you're burning it. So you might think over here as well, with the Orla, it has an Isur Hana'ah, you have to get rid of it. So while you're getting rid of it, you may as well get some benefit from it. So maybe that should be okay. So that's why the Braita brought down Isur Hana'ah, plus dying, plus the kindling of the lamp, because those are two areas where you might have thought, even with an Isur Hana'ah, would be Mutar. They're also included in this Isur. Now the Gemara says, Taima Dichtav Rachman of Arlar Tem Arlar To Arelim. Halav Halchi, had it not had this additional wording in the Pasuk, Havamina Isur Achila Mashma, Isur Hana'ah Lo Mashma, then Lo Yachel would only have provided you an Isur Achila, not an Isur Hana'ah. So Gemara says, no. Lo Olam, Lo Yachel Mashma, Ben Isur Achila, Ben Isur Hana'ah. There's an Isur Achila and Hana'ah that's generated by Lo Yachel. Vishani Hotam. The problem over there is that at the end of that Pasuk by the Arelim, it also brings an additional line at the end, which is Arelim Yulachem. They will be for you, Arelim. So that term lachem, I would have thought lachem means for you, means that you can get benefit from it. They're yours. They're yours to do as you please. So the itzrik, zakatat kamina ho viktiv lachem, shalachem yehei, that it should be for you and you should get hana from it. Kamash malon, that is not the case. Ve'ala, hashto dichtibi hana cry lachem lomali. Well, if lachem, you would have a havamina to say that lachem teaches you that you can get hana, but then I have these additional isurim of arotem, arloto, arelim, that come and teach me that there is an Isur Hana'ah, then what do we do with the word lachem in the end? So the Tanya, that we use for the Braita. Lachem, the rabotet, and atua, lirabim, that which is planted for the public. Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, what that means, public for the public. Rashi says planted for the public means that you plant it in the public domain. you plant a tree for the public's use in the public domain. Tosafot says, no, you plant a tree in your yard that you allow the public to take advantage of. So one of those two is the case over here. And therefore, lachem comes the rabot et natua the rabim. That comes to include something that you plant for the public utility. Nevertheless, it still has a restriction of orla. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, otzi et natua the rabim. It comes to exclude that case. Only things that you plant for your personal benefit have a din in orla. Things that you plant for the public benefit do not have a din in orla. My time with the Tanakama. What's the reason behind the Tanakama who says that even public trees have a din in orla? Dichtiv unetatem liachid mashma. The pasuk begins unetatem. Unetatem seems to be speaking to an individual. So if I just had unetatem, I would have thought that only an individual is restricted in orla, but for the public, it wouldn't be that way. So then he has the word lachem, which is a riboy. Lachem comes to teach laviat and atul rabim. Comes to include even something that's public for public utility. Lachem means anything that you do. Anything that you do has a din in orla, whether it's done for your own personal benefit or whether it's done for the public benefit. That's the reasoning behind the Tanakama. Virab Yehuda. Unetate mashma ben rabim ben yachid. Planting means whether you do it for public or you do it for personal benefit. Because in general, people plant trees. It's not the public that plants trees. It's a person that plants the trees. So unetate can mean both the public and it can mean the individual. So it doesn't really matter. Planting is a problem in orla, whether it's for your benefit or for the public's benefit. Vilachem. And the word lachem also means ben yachid ben rabim. That also means individual or rabim. So have a riboy acha riboy. That means that you have two psukim, or words, that are inclusive in nature. And we have a principle, vein riboy achariboy el lamait. When you have two inclusionary psukim, or words, in a row, that comes to exclude something. I mean, since you would have said there is orla by public benefit, the fact that there are two ribuyim for that comes to be mayit, and say, no, that's not the case, and by public benefit, there is no iser orla. So that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position. Okay, we're going to stop over here.